Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and this hour, horror, later on from Escape from 1948. But first, Quiet Please, from the Mutual Broadcasting System, heard on January 14th, 1948, the story, The Room Where the Ghosts Lived.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called The Room Where the Ghosts Live.
No. No, I won't let you take me out of the house. No, I'm going to stay right here. I'm sorry, Doctor.
But, Lawrence, we've got to get you to a hospital. Now stop being a fool.
I won't. I'm going to die anyway, and I don't want to die in an ambulance somewhere out on an icy road between here and town. I'm sorry, that's final.
I can't do anything for you here, Lawrence.
Maybe I don't want you to do anything for me, Doctor.
I'm going to call the ambulance.
How?
By telephone, of course.
The telephone isn't working.
Oh, that's right, I forgot.
That's funny, isn't it?
What?
What a couple of days of snow can do. No lights, no heat, no water. Just like the days when they lived here.
When who lived here?
The ghosts.
Open your mouth.
What for?
Thermometer.
I'm not raving, Doctor.
Well, let's see anybody. Feel anything?
Sure.
Worse than it was?
A little
morphia won't hurt. It's a good thing I decided to stop in for a cup of coffee. You might have died here all by yourself.
I'm going to die anyway.
Not if I can help it.
Can't help.
Oh, stop that nonsense. May I have your ball? All right, now. That'll relieve the pain in a minute or two. I could take you to the hospital in my car.
No.
And I think I will.
No.
Lawrence, what got into you? What do you want to die for?
Kate Thermauer.
No, not yet. There's nothing wrong with you. You've been the happiest. You've got everything to live for.
No.
Then you go and shoot yourself.
Yep.
Where did you get this pistol, anyway?
Yeah.
Didn't you know it was loaded?
Sure.
That powder and ball have probably been in there for 50 years.
Longer than that.
What?
Longer than that.
Well, there's no telling what kind of infection you can get from that bullet.
No. Don't die at all.
Let's see that thermometer.
High temperature, huh?
Yeah, it's just really high. I guess you're not going to the hospital after all, though.
I told you that, Doctor.
I couldn't move you with that higher temperature.
That's fine. But I told you I wasn't going to be moved anyway. So you see...
Who gave you this pistol?
A British colonel.
What British colonel?
His name's on the lock plate.
Lieutenant Colonel Robert Charles Graves, 17th Regiment of Foot, 1774. Ancestor of the fellow that gave it to you?
No. He gave it to me himself. Yesterday.
Lawrence, how could he?
He's one of the ghosts.
I see.
No, you don't. I'm not delirious, Doctor. He really is.
No, no. Just relax, Lawrence.
Of course. I'm going to die anyway. Isn't that so?
I'm afraid.
Good.
Lawrence.
What?
Why did you do it?
Well, I'm not sure whether I did it on purpose or not. wanted to. But maybe it was an accident. Or maybe
what?
Maybe one of the ghosts. No, I don't think so. I guess it was an accident. I'm glad, though.
But why?
Well, on account of Melanie.
Melanie? Melanie who? Who's Melanie?
Melanie is a girl who lived here 170 years ago.
What?
And who still lives here. It hurts quite a bit, Doctor.
You want me to give you some more morphine?
I guess not. No. I want to tell you things.
Well...
You won't believe me, of course. You think my mind's wandering. Don't you?
Well, I... What difference does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Nothing makes any difference now. The fellow takes a long time dying, doesn't he? After a while, we had the time, huh? Pretty soon, I'll be a ghost to see Melanie. I'd like a little drink of brandy.
Well, just a second. Now, take it easy.
Thanks. Good brandy. Wish I could take some along. It's good.
I wish I could do something for you, Lawrence.
Nothing snowed in, aren't we? Sure. I mustn't leave. I couldn't come back, you know. I have to stay here.
I don't understand that.
I have to stay here, I said. My house. What was I talking about?
The ghosts.
Oh, yes. So I tried to keep the house like it was in the old days, see? All by myself. Been fun. And then noises. Heard noises.
What kind of noises?
People beating on door, rattling on latch. Every night. I'm not afraid, Doctor.
I know, Lawrence.
Well, I got up, went all over the house. Noises stopped after a while.
It wasn't a dream?
No dream. Beating on a door someplace. Always sounded like it came from right over there. You see?
Well, there isn't any door there, Lawrence.
That's what I thought. My hands are cold.
I'll build up the fire.
No. I know what it is. I haven't got much time, huh? Have I?
No, Lawrence, you haven't got much time, old man.
I'll have to hurry. Shut your eyes so you can see what I saw. I mean, I didn't see it, see, because it was dark. So, when you shut your eyes, you feel the way I felt.
Huh? I... All right, Lawrence.
I walked all over the house, lights on. No sound, no hammering on door. No door. I turned off the lights, it starts again. From right over there. I turn on the lights, no door, no noise. And then I get an idea. I turn off the lights again. I walk over where the sound comes from. And there is a door. And I think I hear a woman crying. And footsteps and furniture being shoved around. I said I wasn't scared, didn't I? Well, I was then. You'd be scared, too. Finding a door where there isn't any door and there's somebody on the other side.
But that's the outside wall of the house, Lawrence.
No.
What?
There's a room there. The room where the ghosts live.
No, I don't.
I didn't know it, too. You got your eyes shut?
Yes.
If you could hear the noise, like I heard it. Frantic pounding. People pushing their shoulders against the locked door. And I could smell smoke. You see, I didn't know about the ghosts then.
Well, how do you know now?
I'm trying to tell you.
I'm sorry.
Keep your eyes shut. I want you to feel the way I felt. And believe. I reached for the lights again. I turned them on. Nothing happens, just nothing. Except pounding on the door. Slower now. And the woman crying. And I hear her scream. Oh, it's cool, she said. It's French. It means help, help. And I heard her voice again, frightened.
Ouvre
la porte, she said. That's French, too. Means open the door. So they tried to open it, and it was locked. And they were pounding. And she was coughing. And at last I found the key. And I yanked the door open. And the ghosts came out. Lights came back on. There wasn't any door. There wasn't anybody in the room but me. But then I heard something. Somebody walking across the floor down the hall. So I turned and went down the hall after the footsteps, down toward my room. Then I stopped dead. Because the door to my room closed and somebody locked it.
You dreamed that?
No. It was locked. From the inside. So was every other door in the house.
That couldn't be.
Try the doors. Open your eyes and try the doors. Go ahead.
Lawrence, I...
No, go ahead. I'll keep on talking. You have to believe me. Go ahead. I lay down here on the Davenport with the lights on, and I tried to think, but nothing made any sense. I got up, and I tried the outside door. It was unlocked, so I went outside. I had some crazy idea maybe there was a room there. There wasn't, of course. But there were footprints in the snow. Some men's footprints. And a girl's. This last nose covered them all up again, I guess. Well, what about the doors, Doctor?
They're locked from the inside.
You see? Did you hear anything? Did you?
Well, I thought I heard someone moving. As if I'd awakened somebody. But it was probably my imagination.
No, it wasn't. Well, sit down. Oh, I'm getting so tired.
No, Randy, no.
So I came back in, and I sat down. And I hardly noticed that the lights were off again, and then I heard something else. And I said, "Who's that?" And a woman's voice answered me in the dark.
"I'm Melanie."
"Well, who's Melanie?"
"Once I was a maid in this house in the time of the war. When the soldiers were captured on Christmas night at Trenton. And these escaped and came here to be hidden by Monsieur Maurice. For he was no patriot. And they were kept...
And you'd think I'd be surprised, but I wasn't very... I didn't interrupt her. She went right on telling me how Maurice was a loyalist and how he hid the officers and how the neighbors suspected him and spied on him.
Then Monsieur Maurice must go away, you see. And I was left alone to bring food to the poor soldiers. And there was a night when I took their food to them. And when I would go from the room, I found the door to be locked from the other side. But soon we smelled the smoke of the fire. For someone had set fire to the house to destroy these men. And we beat upon the door. But it did not avail us. And so we perished in the fire. I and the British officers. And there was none to know our fate. And for our sins, we are bound forever to this house. Although I have not sinned so very greatly. And I would thank you for releasing us from that room. For so many times we have cried out, yet no one would open the door.
And I opened the door, but now all my doors are locked against me.
Yes. They say it is their house now, and no man can open the doors again.
I think we'll see about that.
They say you must go away.
Well, I'm not going away.
I should be sorry when you go away.
You would?
You have released us. I am grateful.
Thanks. I think they'd be grateful, too.
They are soldiers, monsieur, and they have not forgotten the manner of their death. This is their revenge, that no man shall live in this house.
Well, that's fine. I'm to be chased out of my house by a bunch of ghosts.
It is so, monsieur.
How do you feel about it?
I could wish you could always be here, monsieur.
So?
Yes, monsieur. But it cannot be. Unless
what?
It cannot be.
If I turned on the lights, could I see you?
No, monsieur. The eyes of the living cannot see us.
What did you look like?
I did have blue eyes, monsieur. And my hair was black. And I was not very tall. And my feet were very small.
And your clothes?
Once I had a gown of taffety. And it was blue. Like my eyes, I remember. And there was a cap of lace for my grandmother in Brittany.
And I was struck with a sudden impulse to see this girl with the black hair and the taffety dress that matched her eyes. And I jumped up and snapped the lights on. And the room was empty. And so I knew I'd been dreaming.
Oh, cool.
But I wasn't dreaming, my friend. She came to me the next night, and the next. Oh, it's so cold. Am I dying now? Is this what it feels like?
Here, take a little sip of this.
Oh.
Better?
How much longer? Well, see, friend, I found myself in love with a ghost. Yes, Melanie. And she loves me, Doctor. And we talked about it so much. There must be a way out. But there couldn't be a way out. And the others kept telling her I must go on, and I asked you to go to them. Go to them and beg them to let me stay. It was the only way. But she told me they said no. They made a pact between themselves and they'd not alter it. And the time was getting short. They were sorry, they said, but. And then last night, she came to me again. When the snow was piling deeper and deeper around the windows, and I said, Melanie, I can't go now. Can't they see that? And she said,
I have spoken again with the colonel.
And what did he say?
He will come to you, he said.
And what?
He will not speak to the living.
But what good?
I do not know. He said he will come to you.
When?
Tonight. Do not speak. Say, monsieur le colonel. I have the honor to present Monsieur the Lieutenant Colonel Robert Charles Graves of His Majesty's 17th Regiment of Foot. Monsieur the Colonel wishes me to present his compliments to you. And to say to you that he has taken counsel with his fellow officers. No, do not speak. Monsieur Le Colonel wishes me also to say that he and his fellow officers have come to a decision in the matter of yourself. They honor you for your devotion to me, and they beg leave to supply you with the means of assuring you permanent residence in this house. Monsieur the Colonel begs you to accept as a token of his esteem this.
I turned on the lights. It was there on the floor. Flintlock pistol loaded, good issue black flint. Personal gift from Robert Charles Graves, 17th foot. Well, I thought a long time. Turned off the lights. Called her. No answer. Talked to her. Told her I loved her. Wasn't brave enough to. Said I loved her. Couldn't do it. Drive.
No.
No, I didn't do it. No, I didn't. Long toward morning, heard footsteps again. Boots, sword, spurs clicking. Knew who it was. Said, hello, Colonel. Said, Colonel, thanks, only haven't got courage enough. Always love her, Colonel, I said. Said, here's your pistol. I'm a coward. Oh. Drink, please. And then I wake up here, daylight. See? If Colonel Graves couldn't have fellas show me way out, couldn't have fella pull trigger for me? Hello. Melanie, in your blue taffety dress, and your blue eyes, and your light.
You have listened to Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper. Lawrence, the man who spoke to you, was Ernest Chappell. And Melanie was Claudia Morgan. The doctor was played by James Van Dyke. Our sound effects by Albert April. Music for Quiet, Please, except for our theme, which is from the Allegretto movement of the César Franck Symphony in D minor, is composed and played by Albert Berman. Now for a word about next week's Quiet, Please, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
Baker's Dozen is the title of next week's story, the story of one man, two men.
This is the National Broadcasting System.
Quiet, Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 14th of January, 1948 on the Mutual Network. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Escape, featuring Algernon Blackwood's story, Ancient Sorceries. The tale first published in one of Blackwood's short fiction collections called Ancient Sorceries and Other Tales in 1927. He was one of the genre's most prolific writers, and around the turn of the century, being published up until his death in 1951, so it is feasible he could have heard or at least known about this broadcast of Escape from February 15, 1948 on CBS.
Fed up with the shoveling snow? Can't shake that cold of yours? Wonder what the world's coming to?
We offer you Escape.
You are alone in a remote village on the Welsh border, surrounded by silent townspeople who are watching and waiting for you to decide to lose your soul.
Hello. Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully contrived to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to a remote section of Wales and a strange village between two worlds. As Algernon Blackwood described it in his eerie story, Ancient Sorceries. I had spent a week's vacation in Wales and was returning to London by train when it all began. It was late afternoon. We'd left the Welsh mountains and crossed the border into Western England, passing through a countryside which appeared singularly empty, deserted of life. Over the soft hills and the valleys between hung a faintly perceptible haze, given to the whole landscape a feeling of enchantment and unreality. The train at length slowed down to a stop at a tiny wayside station. As it did so, a sudden thought occurred to me. Why not leave the crowded train with its irritating noises and spend the night in this peaceful spot, then take a slower and emptier train in the morning? On the impulse, I rose from my seat and the man sitting opposite to me said,
"Why, say, sir, we only stopped here for a minute or two. If you're thinking of walking about a bit..."
"No, as a matter of fact, I'm getting off here."
"I thought you were going to London."
"I'll go on in the morning. I'm going to stay here for the night."
"I strongly advise you not to."
"I beg your pardon?"
"This is the village of Malton."
"Malton? I've never heard of it."
"Few people have, outside. But if you place any value on your soul, you'll not spend the night here."
"My dear sir, what are you talking about? Why not?"
"Because of the sleep. And because of the cats. That's all I can tell you."
"You're insane. I'll take my bag, if you don't mind."
"You're making a terrible mistake. You may not even have the chance to regret it. Don't leave this train. I know what I'm talking about."
"No, but utter nonsense."
"Don't. Don't, I tell you."
"Goodbye." I stood there on the embankment as the train pulled away. What in the world was the matter with the man anyway? Cats, sleep. His words made no sense. I picked up my bag and started walking up the long hill toward the village. And suddenly, for no reason at all, I shivered. Hello? Hello, is anybody here?
Yes?
Oh, I didn't see you at first.
Is there something I can do for you, sir?
Why, yes, I saw your sign outside the Inn of the Golden Bough. I should like to get a room, please.
You're planning to stay here?
Why, yes.
Very well. You may sign the register. Here.
Thank you. I'm going to catch another train and go on in the morning.
Oh, yes, of course.
There, well.
Arthur Llewellyn. Llewellyn?
Yes, from London.
Arthur Llewellyn. You've been a long time coming back.
What?
But now that you're here, you'll find there are some things that never change.
Madam, I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about.
You rang, madam?
Where did you come from?
Don't worry. The gentleman would like a room for the night. His name is Arthur Llewellyn.
Aye, so it is. Welcome back to Malton, sir.
What? I knew I'd never been here before. What was it all about? First the man on the train, and now these people. Were they crazy, or was I? I left the inn and walked along narrow cobbled streets, beneath quaint gables leaning out from the silent shuttered houses, through dappled pools of light and shadow. It gradually dawned upon me that the village of Malton was centuries old, older than any town in England ought to be. And the people I passed now and then were dressed in the fashion of another day. They paid no attention to me. They went silently about their own business. Yes, that was it. That's what I'd been noticing. Silently.
They came and went with only soft padding sounds to mark their passing, as though they walked in shoes with soles of velvet. When I stopped, there was no sound. The silence was unbroken. I hurried on through the streets and came at last to the far side of the village, to a place where the hill broke away sharply from a low, flat wall of stone, perhaps a rampart once. I sat down upon it, and the dreamy, lazy somnolence of the place stole over me. Presently, I don't know how much later, I became aware of the sound of weird music rising out of the vale below me. I looked down from the rampart. The sunken plain at the bottom melted away into a sea of gathering shadow, blurred in a swirl of thickening mist. I thought of dead trees swept by the night wind, of animals with half-human voices singing to a white moon, of the wailings of cats on the roof tiles at night, of unearthly creatures far off in the sky calling to one another in chorus. I felt my heart beat faster and faster, felt the vague stirrings of some urge inside of me, trying to answer the awful call of that music. I fought against the feeling, fought against myself. And even as I did, I found I was staring down into that valley, peering desperately into the darkness, trying to see, I don't know what. And then suddenly, the music ended. I stood on the rampart alone, dusk fallen around me, and the early night wind moaned with a chill breath. Quick terror rose up in me. I turned and ran through the darkened streets, ran with my heart pounding, dodging its shadows, through one dim alley after another, and arrived at last panting and almost breathless at the door of the Golden Bar.
Been a long time returning, Mr. Llewellyn. It's past 7.
Oh, yes. I guess I walked farther than I meant to. I didn't realize it was so late.
You heard the music, didn't you?
Yes. Strangest music I've ever heard. How did you know? Who plays it, anyway?
Then you didn't remember it?
No. Why should I? The thing was becoming irritating, this quiet insistence that I was someone else. I went into my lonely dinner and ate as quickly as possible. Then, taking the candle Dundreary gave me, I crossed the lobby, climbed the stairs behind the desk, and walked past silent doors down the long empty hall that led to my room at the end. I was halfway to my door when suddenly the flame of my candle went out. I stood stock still in the pitch blackness, fumbling for a match. At that moment, I knew that someone or something was there with me in the darkness. I held my breath and listened. There was no sound, no movement. I reached out and felt the wall and moved along it, feeling my way in the inky blackness. It was then I touched it. Near my face, another soft, warm, yielding. And alive. Who? What is it?
It is I, Ilsa.
Who?
Ilsa. Don't you remember me, Arthur?
No.
But wouldn't you like to remember me? Don't you want to see me again? To look at me. No?
I don't know.
But not tonight, Arthur. Perhaps tomorrow. Tomorrow.
I stumbled blindly through the door of my room and shut it behind me. I lit the candle and flung myself across the bed. The room was small, with one shuttered window. And the light of the flame flickered on the walls and ceiling. I stared at the hand that had touched her out there in the dark hall. I lifted it up to my face and smelled of the barbaric scent that still clung to my fingers. It was evil, maddening. The candle sputtered and burned, and the melted minutes dripped away. Who was I? Who were these people? Who was Ilsa? I fell asleep finally and dreamed of soft moving creatures and the silence of life in a dim, muffled world devoid of all feeling but ecstasy. And I dreamed, too, of cats.
Quite late this morning, Mr. Llewellyn.
Huh? Oh, morning, Dundreary. I felt as if I'd been drugged.
The night air here in Malton is very conducive to sleep.
I'd meant to catch the morning train for London. Now it's too late.
What a terrible shame.
Oh, by the way, Dundreary.
Yes, Mr. Llewellyn?
I was wondering if you'd know anyone by the name of Ilse.
Ilse happens to be my daughter, Mr. Llewellyn.
Oh, I didn't hear you come in.
I hope you were able to sleep well, without any unpleasant dreams.
I guess so.
I'm so happy to hear it. Perhaps then you may decide to stay with us for a long time.
That's very kind of you.
No. It isn't kindness, Mr. Llewellyn. But all of us are hoping that you may decide soon.
Decide? Decide what? It was no use. None of them would answer my question. They seemed to think I should know already. I left the inn as soon as I'd eaten, walked around the streets of the village. And I began to notice that I was never completely alone. If I turned down an empty street, someone always stepped from a doorway or entered from the opposite end. Wherever I went, within 5 minutes, a dozen people were strolling near me. And I realized these people were watching me, tensely, as a cat watches a mouse or another cat.
Quite fortunate you came back early, Mr. Llewellyn. Your dinner this evening is a rather special one.
Special? What do you mean by that?
You are to have a guest.
Huh? Who?
An old friend. She's coming now.
The girl who came toward us across the room was lithe and slim. And she moved with the sinuous grace of a young panther. She was lovely. Exotic and terrifyingly beautiful.
May I present Mr. Arthur Llewellyn, Miss Ilse. He's been with us for 2 days.
Yes, I know. My mother told me. May I sit down, Mr. Llewellyn?
Hmm? Oh, yes, please do. Here, permit me.
Thank you. You may serve us, Dundreary.
Thank you, Miss Ilse.
Then you're Ilse?
Yes. Don't you remember me, Arthur?
From last night? It was you last night, wasn't it?
Yes. And other nights. Can't you remember all the other nights?
No.
Then we shall have to try that much harder. It's been such a very long time.
Please, Ilse, what is it all of you talk about? I don't understand any of it.
You will, Arthur. Unless you leave, of course. Weren't you planning to take a train to London in the morning?
Yes. No. No, I've changed my mind.
I'm glad you did. We'll try to make you happy here, my mother and I. And then perhaps you'll stay a long, long time.
No. I must leave for sure in a day or two.
Suppose we wait and see. And meanwhile, if there's anything you want, all you have to do is ask me.
All right. Why don't you tell me about...
Yes, Arthur. About what?
No. No, I don't want to know. I don't want you to tell me. suddenly I realized I was afraid to know. Afraid. I should leave now, but I couldn't leave. It was Ilse. She attracted, repelled, fascinated, and horrified me. All in single flashes of blasting emotion. I felt the presence of a great gray curtain ready to roll back at any moment and leave me on the brink of an awful adventure. I knew the village held its breath, watched and waited. And then on the evening of the fifth day, the whole ghastly secret exploded into hideous life. After dinner, Ilse had asked me to walk with her. It was the first time I'd been outside the inn after dark. We walked through the village in the moonlight, saying little, and came finally to the stone rampart above the sunken plain. We were quite alone.
Look, Arthur.
Hmm?
It's a full moon tonight. Do you know what that means?
Yes. It means I can see more clearly how beautiful you are.
Do you really believe that? Do you think I'm beautiful?
Like a soft, sleek leopard in a warm jungle of shadows. But wait, I'll see you even better in a moment.
Arthur, what are you doing?
These dry leaves by the walls will make an excellent bonfire. There, you see?
No. No.
What's
wrong? The fire. No, Arthur, put it out.
All right, Ilse. There. Don't worry. It's all right. I'd had a chance to get started. There, you see, it's all out.
Yes, I see.
Ilse, why did it bother you so much?
Don't you remember? Don't you remember the fire?
No. What fire?
No. Don't talk of it. Look at me instead. Look at me, Arthur.
Yes, Ilse.
Arthur, do you love me?
Yes. Yes, Ilse, I love you. I love you and I want you.
I'm glad. That means you'll come back to us then.
I don't know what you mean, Ilse.
You can know everything. Tonight, if you want to.
Yes, I do, I do.
You must know a part of it already. Down inside. You must remember some of it, don't you?
Yes. It's like something buried for centuries inside of me, and now it's beginning to come alive.
Let it come alive. Don't fight against it. You belonged to us once long ago, and you still belong.
Yes. I seem to know that.
That's why you came back. You heard them calling. You heard me calling. And you came seeking the old life again.
Yes. But Ilse. Ilse, I'm afraid.
Are you afraid of me? Look at me.
Ilse.
Kiss me.
Ilse.
Will you live the old life again with me tonight?
Yes, yes.
I've known that you would because I own you, Arthur. You belong to me and I want you and I shall never let you escape from me again.
Yes.
Go back to the inn then. Wait for me, Arthur. I shall come for you. Tonight.
Back at the inn, I paced the floor of my room. A tense, uncontrollable excitement driving me along in a nervous frenzy. The dry crypt of memory broke open and all the things I'd hidden away for centuries poured into my consciousness. I knew now why I'd come here. I knew what I was going to do. And I knew that I was lost. I sensed the rising stir of movement throughout the inn and outside in the courtyard below my window. I knew what to expect when I threw open the shutter. From every window of the inn and from those of the houses about the court were leaping great monstrous beasts with soft dark fur and eyes that gleamed with eerie phosphorescence. Cats of human size. This then was the secret of Molten, lycanthropy, the witchcraft of centuries long dead and buried. The half-human cries floated up to me and the moon cast their dark shadows on the ground as they padded across the courtyard and vanished through the narrow streets of the village, heading for a hideous rendezvous. This is what I'd been. This is what I wanted to be now. I scarcely heard the door of my room open behind me.
Are you ready, my lord? Shall we join you?
Ilse.
Here, Arthur. The sacred balm. Made of a vein and mistletoe and blind things out of the sea. Remember?
Yes.
Yes, I remember.
Take it. Use it. We'll change now. Transform. Leap from the window and join them. Lead us again, Arthur.
Yes. But not here, Ilsa. Not yet. Wait until we get there. Then we'll change.
If you wish. Come then, Arthur, to the stone wall above the grove. That's where we'll change, on the stone ramparts.
In the grove on the sunken plain beneath the wall, insane shadows writhed in the moonlight and postured in the luminous mist. A thousand of the devil's own were dancing in the unearthly music born from the harmony of the black sacrifice, crying out in delirious abandon, calling to the thing that now lived inside of me, and struggled, screaming in my skull, trying to answer them back. I fought against them, fought against Ilsa, pleading and clinging with her soft arms about my neck.
Now, Arthur, come with me now if you love me.
I love you, but I can't do it. I can't do it. Not again.
Yes, my love, only an instant of change, and then we'll live forever.
Is it living without a soul,
Does
Ilsa?
Does it matter when I'm here?
No, once before I escaped, but I can never escape again. This time there'd be no turning back.
Am I not worth it? Look at me, my love.
I clung to the very edge of my sanity, thought that I would not be lost and damned forever, and at this moment, I knew what I could do.
Arthur, wait. What are you doing?
I found a match in my pocket, struck it, dropped it into the dry leaf that lay banked across the whole length of the stone wall.
No, Arthur, don't.
Yes.
I can't come to you through the fire. You're driving me away.
Yes. Go, Ilsa, go into the valley. Goodbye, Ilsa. Goodbye.
You fall.
I turned from the wall of flame that for a few minutes would shut me off from the valley, ran through the moonlight streets, not back toward the inn of the Golden Bough, but down the long road that led away from that cursed village of Malton.
Well, Mr. Llewellyn, I find this one of the most interesting cases of hallucination I've encountered since I began the practice of psychiatry.
I tell you, it really happened, Doctor.
And having investigated your story a bit during the past week, I'm in a position now to answer most of the questions that have been worrying you since you came back to London.
What do you mean, investigated?
I went up to Hereford and looked over some of the old records there. Then I motored over to Malton for a couple of hours.
Well, then you know it's all true. You saw it. You know I was there.
Oh, there's no question but what you were there, Mr. Llewellyn. The lady who runs the inn showed me your name in the register. Said you left suddenly without taking your luggage or paying your bill. She was really quite put out.
I see. Well, what of the records, Doctor, the ones you spoke of?
I think they really explain the whole thing, Mr. Llewellyn. It seems that during the 14th century, the village of Malton became a kind of headquarters in that part of the country for the practice of witchcraft.
Yes, go on.
Numerous trials were held there in the late 1300s, and a great many men and women were convicted of sorcery and burned to death.
Yes?
In the records of a trial in 1372, I found the name of an Arthur Llewellyn and of Ilsa and her mother.
That proves it, then.
It proves a clear case of hallucination. You knew that story before you went there, not consciously, but somewhere deep in your latent memory.
I knew nothing about it before.
That man was an ancestor of yours. The story must be known in your family. When you arrived in Malton, accidentally, the association of the name just pulled the trigger, and your imagination did the rest.
Yes, but Doctor, my parents died when I was four. I've never been around any of my family ever.
No matter. You see, a childhood memory is amazingly persistent at times.
Yes. Yes, I suppose it is. I knew then what I had to do. The only thing I could do. There'd be no use in talking further with the doctor. He'd find some phrase of science to cover everything. He'd even try to explain away the mark I still carried across my shoulder where Ilsa had thrown her arm about me in those last mad minutes on the rampart. A mark that was covered with soft gray fur like the fur of a cat. I knew now what had to be done, and what must be done while I still retained my sanity. One last act, final and irrevocable. An act that begins by walking into the railway station at Charing Cross.
Good evening, sir. May I help you?
Yes. I'd like a ticket to Malton, please.
Malton? I don't believe I...
A little village on the Swansea line near the border of Wales.
Oh, yes. Here it is. I don't believe I've ever sold a ticket to Malton before.
I don't doubt it.
Let's see. 4 and 6, single fare, first class. Did you wish a return trip, sir, or one way? What did you say?
Oh, I'm sorry. Make it one way.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robson.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 15th, 1948 on CBS. And that does it for this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great stories from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.